You're listening to Real People of Orange County, and I'm your host, Kimberly Martin. This show is a fun and informative look inside the lives of Orange County's best and brightest. These are people who serve their community in a meaningful capacity on KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine.
Well, hello. Gosh, it's been a while since I've sat in the hot seat here at KUCI, and I think you might be able to hear in my voice just a little bit. I'm recovering from a cold, a nasty cold. I don't know. It's just a head cold that keeps moving its way around and circulating. So I apologize for that post-nasal sound in my my otherwise usually calm and soothing radio talk show host voice. But suffer along with me, if you will. And hey, I'm here to wish you a happy new year. Oh my gosh, it has been such a long holiday season. I don't know. It just seems like it went on forever. And I missed you guys. Let's just face it. I took a couple of weeks off, and thank you to everybody who stood in here at KUCI and hosted and let me have a little time to rest. And you know what happens when you rest? You get sick. So that's typically what happens to the busy moms in our lives. But fortunately, we don't get sick until after all the fun has happened. So I made it through New Year's Eve and then crashed on New Year's Day. And I've been down for the count ever since. So, but it's good to be back. And I miss you all out there. And can't wait to hear what you're all planning for the new year. Don't forget to call in and let me know. And also, keep in mind that we are here to take recommendations too, because at Real People OC, we love to know who you think needs a shout out or who we should be featuring on our show. So, I don't know, I've been thinking a lot about this New Year's resolution thing, and I prided myself on not trying to do any crazy, crazy stuff. But I was thinking, we all turn towards ourselves and we look at what we should change in our lives. It seems like a good time. We've had a little bit of rest, a little bit of fun, and we're all filled up. So it's a good time to make some changes, a good jumping off point. But I was thinking, there's probably a wider place that we should be looking at, not just in ourselves and in our own lives. And the New Year's resolutions that we do for our bodies are really important. And it's always good to take, a check, like an inventory of what needs to be done and what we need to do. But I've been thinking of those wider issues. I don't know, I've been a little more worried lately than I used to be. Maybe it's just my age, or maybe, the cost of water rising and worrying about how much fresh water we have access to in life. These things are top of mind for me today. And so with that, I was thinking, well, how come we don't ever set New Year's resolutions for our bigger home, which is our planet? And I thought, I know just the gal to bring in to talk about these issues, because it's been an ongoing conversation I've been having with her for some time. So I want to welcome our guest to the show today. And her name is Diana Deem. And Diana, just say a quick hello.
Hi, everybody. I am so excited to be here. And Kimberly, thank you so much for having me.
Oh, I'm so happy you're finally here. We've been having a great discussion, and let me just tell you a little bit about Diana Deem. Diana is, she is a pro, let's just put it that way. She is a founder and a producer and a host of Sustainability News and Entertainment Radio. And so we're going to hear a little bit about what it's like to be a real live radio talk show host out there in the world at large. And really, honestly, globally, Diana makes her way around talking about sustainability and really saving our planet. And so she's going to share with us some ideas today about what we might be able to do to think, okay, we're making some personal resolutions. Maybe we make some ones for the planet as well. And in hopes to better not just our own lives, but the lives of everybody around us and the nature and the natural world around us as well. So I want to hear a little bit about your background. So you have a really nice long bio, and you've done a lot. So let's take a minute to talk a little bit about you and what you've done.
Well, thanks. I have to say, I kind of fell into doing what I do. And, as a student all those years ago, I wanted to do something that would make some difference in the world. So I started thinking about, all right, how do I get more involved in the environment? So about 20 years ago, I ended up taking a position with a company called Hewlett-Packard. And then I left there and I went to another company called Wheelabrator Frye. And they both had a very important focus on the environment and what they were doing to give back in communities, in addition to how to lower your environmental footprint. right?
Okay, so that's the big buzzword is, you know, your carbon footprint or your environmental footprint. Just let's go back to the basics. Like, what is a footprint? And do I have one?
That's or a two, wonderful or question. Three. That is a wonderful question. We all have a footprint. You just made me think of the poem years ago, Footprints, you know, what's been left in the sand. And I think back on that quite a bit. And how do we not leave that footprint? How do we not leave, say, for example, things like trash behind? Or how do we use less? How do we create a world where we create our new products that are 100% recyclable or 100% compostable or 100% biodegradable? You know, how do we think about our future generation and how do we support our future generation? You know, the students at UCI are unbelievable. They're out there looking at water and energy and waste and all the things that we can do to develop new clean technology. And it's a very, very exciting time. We think about the big picture of, you know, how do we create a sustainable planet for our next generation? That's your kids, my kids, their kids, our grandkids, and beyond.
You know, it's a conversation that I think can sometimes be so overwhelming that people just shut down before they have it.
Mm-hmm.
And it certainly is slowly creeping into our understanding. But take us back 20 years when you were new and emerging into this, we'll call it a field, even though it probably wasn't one back then. What was that like to be having these conversations in early corporate boardrooms when these things weren't top of mind for our business owners and our large corporations?
You know what, Kimberly, that is such a good question. Okay, so 20 years ago, it was basically considered a housekeeping issue. Housekeeping issue. So what do we do with our chemicals in these big manufacturing facilities? What do we do to get rid of them? You know, back in the day, you hear horror stories of just, you know, putting things into our waters, putting things into our oceans, our streams, just to make it go away. Now, today, there is no more away, right? We have our landfills filling up, our oceans are filling up, for example. What are we going to do about that? So going into these boardrooms years ago, I used to always think about, okay, what's in it for these corporations? What's in it for me? What's in it for you? What's in it for, you know, students listening to the show right now? Why would we want to create a sustainable planet? So back in those days, it was all about compliance, EPA and OSHA compliance, so we don't get in trouble. And then it transitioned from that into corporate social responsibility. You know, we started asking these questions. All right.
That was Anita Roddick from The Body. What's the show? The Body Shop. She was kind of the first one. She had an organization called BSR, Businesses for Social Responsibility.
Yeah. And it's still around today. So people start thinking about, you know, how you bring up such a good point. What is our footprint? Right. So you think about what we're actually doing. What are we actually doing here today? What are we doing on the planet? This ties back to exactly what you said in the beginning of the show. We got to take care of our bodies, but our bodies live on this planet. So what do we do about that, right? So do we recycle? You know, they're simple little things, right? Big corporations, did they start recycling programs? Did they start looking at the chemicals they were using? Did they start looking at alternatives? Did they look at their water use? Are they saving money today with regard to renewable energy versus, you know, fossil fuels, for example? So there's this big trend in shifting towards how do we change what we've been doing after these, you know, the past 20 years, and how do we market? How do we take it to consumerism and marketability of new products, for example?
Okay, so, you know, like I told you earlier, the conversation is so overwhelming, I don't know where to start.
Mm-hmm.
But I still want to know, back then, you know, you were saying it was a housekeeping issue. And then we were talking about how important it is to align those incentives. So you have to align them in such a manner that the company that wants to fix the problem has a cost-benefit benefit to doing so. But if they don't, then they don't address the issue, especially when it's cheaper to just dispose of it down, you know, somebody's river than it is to address the problem in a more correct way. I'm curious, what were some of those early conversations like? Do you remember some of them? Can you share?
I can remember, and this was 20 years ago. There's been huge advancements, right? US EPA has played a big role in causing incentive for corporations to really get on board. And I have to tell you, I've been in the corporate world for a long time and have transitioned through it to today. And many companies out there are actually looking to see how they can integrate sustainability principles into all they do. And what they're realizing is they're saving a lot of money. So say, for example, just make something easy, okay? Say, for example, a computer, okay? How do we build and design a computer that's more energy efficient? Like today, we're starting to see companies out there, this is pretty cutting edge stuff, but companies out there trying to figure out how to put solar on laptops, for example, or solar on computers, so that they can we can use that as either a secondary or a primary use of energy to power our computers. Okay.
Okay. Interesting.
So in the day, you never would have thought that something like that was even possible 20 years ago, right? I can remember sitting in the corporate boardroom saying, what's it going to take for all of us to get our heads around making elements of creating our sustainable planet cool? Now we've got the cool, sexy factor happening.
Right. Right. So true. Okay. So you're listening to these conversations way back when. Were most people trying to wipe it under the rug? Or was there really a true, pure intent to maybe do the right thing?
You know what? I think awareness had everything to do with it. You know how sometimes as humans, we'll just be going down the road and we won't really think about what we're doing. And then when we realize the true impact of it, you know, that you know, polluting or emitting or you know, workplaces that aren't healthy, they're affecting the human beings. So once people were made aware, whether it was a big stick over their head, a big fine, whatever it might have been, then there was, that's where the innovation can begin.
So somebody had to stick it to them first.
In many cases, yeah.
Right, right, right. And that's probably that really complex interplay between government regulation and, you know, corporate freedom. You know, we're going to make it so that you have to, but then you use your money to innovate, to create new and different ways to fix problems. If you're just tuning in with us, I have the pleasure of sitting with a radio talk show host, Diana Deem, and she hosts Sustainability News and Entertainment Radio. And that is a podcast that you can tune into weekly, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you find that on snetoday.com if you want to tune in and listen to Diana's show. Diana's experience, she was successfully launched Hewlett-Packard's Green IT Initiatives in 2008. And she's really kind of walked that line between public and private sector. What was it like to bring a project like that to fruition in a major corporation such as Hewlett-Packard?
That's a great question, Kimberly. It was a lot of fun, a lot of hard work, a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. But getting it done, it really shifted thinking. And then it started, you know, today Hewlett-Packard's, they're in their labs doing things. They're developing new energy sources, for example. They're developing new IT systems, you know, water management, you know, waste management. They're using IT to predict information that was never predictable before. So I think when we start to look at where these companies have come from, and yeah, not everybody's perfect, right? We still hear a lot about companies not doing the right thing, but we hear a lot about companies doing the right thing. And it's very interesting to see how a lot of these new think tanks within companies are trying to design and build facilities, say, for example, off the grid, right? How are we...
You mean off the energy grid, right? Yeah. Not as in disappearing that nobody sees or the government, you know, like off the grid can mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people. That means you're not paying your taxes.
Yeah, yeah. No,
that's
off
not
the
what
grid.
You mean.
No,
you mean off the power grid.
Yeah. The off the grid basically means how do you reuse or resupply different forms of energy and not necessarily having to focus just on fossil fuels, for example.
Interesting. So, you know, I remember seeing one of these horrible pictures where they showed what our power grid really looked like from, you know, city to city. And it's just this complex mess of wires that really didn't look like it was developed, you know, with intention, but all these wires managed to connect here and went over here. It looked more like a Dr. Seuss novel, you know, kind of like a scene out of The Lifted Lorax, you know, where all these things are connected. And it scared me. It made me realize that we are so much more living on the line, like just, you know, just by luck and circumstance, and not so much through a really a really, you know, certain source of energy. So everybody should be worried, shouldn't they?
Well, you know, it's funny. The show is all about solutions for the planet. Like, we invite you to the table to tell your story and share your sustainable solution for the planet. And one of the topics was, how do we recreate our energy grid? Getting exactly what you're talking about right now. It's amazing that you're bringing this up. It's really great. But what we're seeing now is a huge learning curve, right? There's a lot of early adopters out there that are looking at, okay, how do we use solar, for example? How do we use geothermal? How do we use hydro? How do we use all these alternatives? So it's almost like a crashing of fossil fuels. Yeah, they're going to be here a while. You know, they're going to be here for a while.
Do we know, like, are there some estimates of time of how much time we have to fix this problem?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I think the fix is happening. I mean, what I'm learning from these public utilities is they're working at new ways using clean technology and also using technology to manage what they do. I mean, look at what we can do today just with, you know, Verizon and our TV sets. You know,
right.
It's the same thing.
Right. Unless all those things don't kill us first with cancer because they're floating around in the air. I don't know.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I think that if we can get back to design with intent. And when I say design with intent, I mean, how do we look at our products today so that we can design them for tomorrow? And I think this is the core and the opportunity for UCI students to really look deeply at if they're designing products or if they're designing or researching new concepts. How do they look at sustainability? How do they look at the cost associated with it? How do they look at the positive human impact? And then how do they also look and integrate lowering our environmental footprint, meaning not emitting, not you know, looking for alternatives, for example, for chemicals and things like that, just to transition us. So one example that I love to use is back in the day when we had to go to war, and 40s, I guess. Yeah, right around the 40s, 50s. And the United States got together and said, all right, we've got all these automotive, you know, manufacturing facilities coming online. We need weapons. How quickly did we shift to do that? We had to do that immediately because our life depended on it.
Right.
Right now, I think that we're doing that. A lot of people don't believe it, but a lot of people are actually doing that and making money at doing that.
So you think the transition's happening fast enough? Or you see more changes than less?
What I'm seeing right now is I'm seeing this incredible opportunity to innovate.
Mm.
Innovate, innovate, innovate. And I'm seeing big corporations doing it. I'm seeing social entrepreneurs doing this. I'm seeing people coming up with these solutions that are absolutely mind-blowing.
You said something interesting just a minute ago when you said developing products with intent. I think products have always been developed with intent. It's just whether the intent was correct, right? So the intent is probably what's changed. Before, the intent probably was develop a product to maximize revenue or, you know, profitability of a product, right?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that was the most important intent at the time. What you mean really is far deeper, don't you?
I do. Yeah. I do. And I love that you just said it like that, because what we thought in the day in developing something, you know, take plastic, for example, right? Remember in The Graduate, everybody, you know, son, the future's plastic. Well, my belief system is, son, the future is renewable energy. Same thing. So, I mean, not the same thing, but a similar process for moving things forward. That's ingenuity. That's innovation. So when you talk about maximization of revenue, imagine if students at UCI started thinking about, well, I'm going to build product and I'm going to build services and I'm going to create all of these things and I'm going to research this, that, and the other thing that focused on three things. One, how is it recyclable? Is it 100% closed loop? Does it go cradle to cradle? That's the terminology that we use in the sustainability world. But is it something that once we're done with it, we can reuse it?
Okay.
Okay. So biodegradable. That's number two. Will it biodegrade? You know, will it biodegrade in I mean, we are out of space for landfills, and our oceans are full of trash.
Floating around there, like
Big Island. We've got the seven, you know, the five gyres in our oceans, and the biggest challenge right now is how do we clean that up? You know, there's little teeny tiny particles that the fish are eating. We eat the fish. What does that tell you? You know, and then the third one, it's compostability, right? 40% of the food that we grow every year is just wasted.
I can attest to that in my own fridge.
Yeah. Yeah, if we thought more about that, can you imagine what we could do? That's actually becoming a national security issue. Food security and population as population grows.
Sure.
You know, so there's so many interesting moving parts here. And if we, you know, we're seeing a lot with, you know, farm to table, for example. You know, how are we going to grow on our own? How are we going to support our local communities? So there's some really interesting solutions happening right now.
It is really funny, that whole notion of food. People really think that they'll just always be able to run to that market and buy it, and it'll be there.
You are so right. And if we think about it again, if we, this would be an excellent study if students at UCI would like to get on board and do this together with us. You know, look at the comparative between food security, food scarcity, and population growth.
Right.
And then create that roadmap for how we could, in fact, meet the need.
Right. I mean, every single one of these topics we bring up is so overwhelming. Where do we start? You know, I love the fact that you're on campus here and you're sharing a challenge, really, with UCI students that are... Well, I'm not sure what degree they would be pursuing, but there's probably any number of them. You're sharing with them the notion that they should innovate, and innovate with the three things that we just discussed in mind: the compostability, recyclability, and the biodegradability. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to me, if you will. You have worked with Dr. Bill Cooper. He's a professor here at UCI with the Urban Water and Research Center, and he's currently doing a stint with the National Science Foundation. Tell me about your relationship with Dr. Bill Cooper and what you guys have worked on together.
Dr. Bill Cooper's amazing. He, I think many people on the campus know who he is and what he's done. He's done so many interesting things. He's passionate. He's somebody that will, you meet him and the energy level is just so high, and he's just so excited about trying to figure out ways to manage water, especially in the state of California and across, you know, across the nation. I think some of the things that he's done that really brought, you know, humor and also a collective together, he started the Women in Water conference here at UCI. And it was, we were kind of joking in the beginning, we're like, women in water?
You mean you conjure up ideas of a man organizing a wet t-shirt contest.
Exactly. It wasn't anything like that, though, I assure you. It was actually so informative. It would fill the Beckman Center. And people would come from all over. They had Pat Mulroy come in and talk about water in Las Vegas. That's the desert. You know, how is she cracking the code on water management in Las Vegas? And she had some very, very funny comments about how she was doing it. And then she also did commercials. And I don't know if anybody on, you know, that's listening has seen any of the commercials in Las Vegas, but they're quite funny. There was a... you picture an old woman sitting in her chair with her cane, and she's looking out the window across the street. She sees somebody just, you know, broad daylight, you know, there's water running, there's sprinklers running for a good hour. She gets up out of her chair. She goes nice and slowly across the street. She knocks on the door. The guy opens the door and he's like, "Hi." She kicked him right in the pants and basically said, you know, turn your water off.
Right.
But that sent quite a message throughout Las Vegas. Yeah.
So chief among what are the things that he's trying to accomplish, can you share with us what his vision is?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things is working with graduate students focused on water and next generation of water. He's focused a lot on climate impact and the nexus between sea level rise. He actually joined me on the show a couple times talking specifically about that, which was very, very interesting. And he's written numerous papers. And like you had mentioned, he's doing a stint in Washington, D.C. at the National Science Foundation focused on water. So I think he's one of the leaders in the world, actually, focused on water. He's also a butterfly guru who's a photographer of butterflies, and he's just recently went to Iguazu and has come back over the holidays to, I think he has about 2,000 species shots of butterflies. So he's quite the naturalist. He was originally an oceanographer. Oh. So he's connected his water dots all his life.
And that matches with some of your passions too, is working with causes for the ocean in addition to the sustainability stuff that we're talking about here.
Absolutely.
Such a big part of it. So if you're just tuning in with us, I have the pleasure of sitting here with Diana Deem, and she is a radio talk show host she's a founder and a producer of her own podcast radio show, and it is called Sustainability News and Entertainment Radio Show. And she is an expert on sustainability and the CEO of Sustainable Business Partnerships. So in that capacity, is that what you do for your consulting business?
I do.
Okay.
I do. It's basically sustainability innovation. Like, how do you take a product or a service and integrate those three things that I talked about earlier, the financial impact, you know, how do you make money? How do you drive positive human impact? And then how do you lower your footprint?
Okay. One of the things that we have talked about doing was putting out a challenge to UCI students. And you might be looking for some collaborative partnerships here on campus, some students that might want to take up a project or two and draw some awareness to the campus.
Absolutely.
Should we talk a little bit about that?
Love to.
Okay. What do you have in mind?
Well, in starting the radio show in 2010, I really had my ear to the ground on things that related to what I called the 10 planetary challenges.
Oh. And that... You're going to have to go through all 10 now. I'm going to want to know what they are.
Oh, geez. I didn't bring my list, but I'll try and do my best.
We're going to just get as many down as we can. How about that?
Well, these 10 planetary challenges, I started thinking about what the world really needed, you know, and that's the whole reason as well why I created the show. How do we create a platform? You know, I made I don't know if it was a mistake or by luck, to start the show in 2010 when we were pretty much digging out, the economy was digging out. And I thought that we really needed some positive options, you know, instead of just all the negativity at the time, you know, with the economy doing so badly and people really in trouble. So I started thinking, all right, how do we create a space for solutions? Okay, so I was interviewing the MIT Climate Interactive team, and one of the guys on the show was really excited talking about how they can identify what's going to happen climate-wise within the next, you know, 10 years, 20 years, 50 years, 100 years. And you just click on a computer, and it will take you through all this information. Well, one guy by the name of Drew Jones was so excited, and I had to stop the show, and I said, Drew, I have to ask you, what is your passion behind this? And he said, well... nobody's really asked me that question before. I said, all right. I had to bite my tongue. You know how hard it is as a host to bite your tongue. And he came back and he said, well, back in 1989, I was at Dartmouth College. And one of my teachers had said, what's your waste impact? What's your trash impact? And so he and a bunch of his radical friends, God bless them, you know, college students, just like here at UCI, decided that they were going to walk around with their trash for, you know, a week.
Oh, their own trash. Each individual's trash.
Huh. Their own trash.
This is in 1989?
1989.
Wow.
1989. Well, one of the funniest things that came out of that was he came back and he said, so off we went. He goes, one of the biggest things we realized is you definitely, you know, want to drink draft beer instead of bottled beer because bottled beer was so heavy.
Bottles are so heavy. But they're more recyclable.
Right, exactly. But if you drink it out of a draft glass, you wash the glass and there's no waste. But anyway.
I guess there's a good point.
Long story short, during the show, I said, Drew, that sounds like an idea that needs to be recycled. He said, really, Di? I said, yeah. He goes, you'll do it? I said, of course I will. So we started down the path the first year, and we had 17 people in 16 states. And I ended up calling my friends at EPA.
Doing what?
Thank you for asking. We decided, after my conversation with Drew, I went home that weekend and I was kind of joking with friends. And I said, I think I'm going to start this thing called the Trash on Your Back 5-Day Challenge.
Oh, I love it.
Everybody said, you're crazy. And I said, well, wait a minute. Hold on a second. we don't know what our own impact is if we don't. It's like taking a trash diet, right? How do you, you know, I'm on diets all the time. You know, how do I write down my food? How do I do all this different stuff? And how do I continue to monitor, you know, what I do? So I did that with trash.
Oh my gosh. So did you personally walk around with your trash for 5 days?
I did. Uh-huh. And I dragged in some very good friends of mine. One of the top guys from the US EPA out of Washington, D.C., Matt Bogosian. He is responsible for pollution prevention for the EPA. He did it. He was actually on the mall in Washington, D.C., playing right behind Cheap Trick, and had his trash on his back. So it sends a message when you're doing this. I also had the mayor of Huntington Beach, Joe Carcio, do it at the time, which was actually pretty funny. This whole process of trash on your back is hysterical. You meet people that you've never met in your life before. You're stopped on the street by complete strangers saying, what the heck are you doing? And then you're also collaborating with people, and you're really waking up to what our real impact is. So the funniest part I have to say is, since that time, the NFL's done it. Couple of leaders from the NFL, couple of teams I'm hoping are going to do it this year. The Falcons have done it. The Seattle Mariners were very involved from the start. The former CEO of Patagonia came on board and did it. I mean, it was, yeah, how crazy is it to go up to somebody and say, will you carry your trash in your back for 5 days?
It's not as glamorous as the ice bucket challenge, but I could see where, you know, some pretty interesting things could happen to you along the way in 5 days.
Well, I got to tell you what we did learn.
Top of mind, I don't think I'd want to be a woman doing the trash in the back challenge.
Well, you know I'm going to drag you in this year.
Well, I was thinking about it, and I conduct my own trash on the back experiment every week when I look at the inside of my car on a Friday after I've been driving my kids back and forth, and I go, I don't need a trash on the back contest. I have a trash in my car contest, and I know how much I'm processing.
You might be onto something.
I know. It's true. Just keep it all in your car, and then you can see what your impact is.
Exactly. Well, one of the things I think that's really important that we walked away with was that the average person, when you hear the calculation of the average person generates 4.4 pounds of trash per day, that came from trash on your back. Okay.
That's so, you, huh?
Yeah. So
that's exciting that you did this.
Isn't that something? Mm. Well, and you know what? It wasn't me. It was just
you and
the
Drew.
Concept.
Yeah.
Well, Drew, yeah. And then these wonderful people, like the CEO of the Green Schools National Network. There's 25,000 K-12 schools. He says, sure, Di, I'll do it. I'll do it with my wife. The two of them traveled across country with their trash on their back. You know, leaders from around the world stepped up. The real, sustainable, passionate people really did this. The other thing that we realized that was really important was that within a period of 5 days, we were able to knock our 4.4 pounds of trash average down to 0.8. So if you look at the math behind this, and again, this gets back to students at UCI and really calculating out and looking closely at what our personal impact is, so mm-hmm. that we can look at the greater impact. And everything, one of the things I like to say is when we look at, you know, these five gyres in the ocean of waste and plastics, it's like, where does this stuff come from? It comes from onshore. So if we can negate what's onshore before it goes offshore, we can really make an impact. Okay, we've got to figure out a way to get the, you know, waste out of the oceans right now. But in the meantime, we can negate what's happening. So long story short here, we also realized that the U.S. spends $12 billion a year in waste management. So when your trash truck comes to your door, takes your trash, and you know, you just think it goes away magically, we're spending $12 billion. So if you look at the reduction from the 4.4 pounds of trash average to 0.8, that's an 82% reduction. If you just take a 50%, let's be conservative here, let's just say 50%, that's a $6 billion opportunity for the nation. Hmm. So that was really interesting to find out. But last year's trash on your back, what we also realized was at the end, like you start, you put your trash on your back and you carry it around with you. And the last day, the fifth day, you dump it all out. You weigh the whole thing and you separate out your compostables, you separate your recyclables, and then you also separate out your waste to landfill. And when we talk about landfills, we're talking about the earth, right?
Right.
And our oceans. So this year, got a whole bunch of college students together, and we recycled and composted everything, but we stopped and looked at what was going to landfill, right? And we started thinking, oh my gosh, if we can redesign what's going to landfill so it negates going to landfill, it never goes to a landfill, our earth or our oceans, there is an opportunity. There is an innovation. There is an opportunity for students of today, tomorrow, and years to come to recreate and drive consumerism around these new products. So for example, packaging, right? A lot of packaging is not recyclable, right? It's not biodegradable and it's not compostable. So the students that I was working with, one of the guys came up to me and he said, Di, is aluminum recyclable? I said, it sure is. He goes, well, I've been using recycled aluminum to make dice. What are you talking about? And he showed me, and it's this beautiful set of dice. And I said, oh my goodness, you need to take this to Caesars. You need to take this to,
wow.
Yeah. So he started a Kickstarter project and raised over $50,000. And today he's manufacturing these recyclable dice. One of the hitches, though, is I didn't realize, but with dice, you're supposed to have a see-through die. That's like regulation dice or whatever. And I said, well, you know, I wonder if some of these casinos would be interested in actually coming up with a new set of dice. So he's out there marketing these things right now and making money. That is one of the best examples, I think, of figuring out how to crack the code on using recycled materials to build another recycled material. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's exciting. Very exciting. Okay, so to keep the conversation going on the trash on your back, though, you said you found a lot of the stuff in there was not recyclable of the trash. Give me some examples, because I throw everything into my recycle bin, and maybe that's not where it all goes, or maybe once it goes into the recycle bin, it's not going to be recycled because it's not able to be.
You know, one of the things that we were so surprised at were packaging. There's so many packaging materials out there that are non-recyclable. You know, those little Keurig cups that we love our coffee with. Right now, we are starting to see a shift towards companies designing and building those Keurig cups, those little tiny coffee cups in using recycled materials. But for a long time, they hadn't done that.
Really?
Yep.
So that plastic was not recyclable, that one that they were using.
Right. And some still aren't. I mean, they're moving rapidly in that direction because of the competition. See, so it gets back to what you said about the maximum revenue.
Aligning those in economic incentives, right?
Right. Exactly.
Okay. So so trash, I want to hear more about some of these trash on your back stories, because this is exciting to me.
Okay. Well, I'll share. Every year we have the rookie move of the year. Right.
The rookie move. Okay. Well, so first of all, what are you carrying your trash in? Does it have to be a plastic bag where everybody could see what's in it?
Well, we try not to use plastic.
Oh,
right? We try not to use plastic.
I was just picturing everybody running around with a big plastic bag. That's such a rookie move right there.
Well, it's funny because this is what trash on your back does. It makes you think about this stuff when you'd never think about it before. Scott Jenkins, he's the Senior Vice President of Operations for the Falcons, the Atlanta Falcons. He used to be with the Mariners. And he said to me, Di, it changed my life. It changed how I do things. He's one of the guys. All right, so we've got the lightweight titleist, right? We've got the heavyweight titleist, who has the most trash on their back, who has the least amount of trash on their back, and the rookie move of the year. Okay. Now, mind you, everybody is having this conversation every day during the week. So we all call in, we all share what we're learning, and it's hysterical. So my dear friend, Matt Bogosian, year one, he's done this now for 3 years. There's a handful of us that have done this for 3 years. We also have a Navy Admiral that's done it for 2 years now. And it's amazing to see how these big leaders and thinkers think after doing it. Like, for example, and I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but the Seattle Mariners, they with Scott at the helm, they were a 98% zero waste stadium.
Wow.
Yeah. So the Major League Sports is really getting on board with regard to waste reduction. There's an organization called the Green Sports Alliance. For you sports fans out there, check them out.
Green Sports Alliance, probably .com or .org?
It's .org.
.org. Greensportsalliance.org. Okay.
And you wouldn't even begin to imagine what they're doing and how much money they're saving in, you know, recycling or composting or you know, creating this zero waste stadium.
So if you're just tuning in with us, you're listening to Real People OC, and I am your host, Kimberly Martin, happy to be back in the studio for the new year. And my guest with us today is Diana Deem. And Diana is here sharing with us all sorts of things about sustainability and the environment. And she is the host of Sustainability News and Entertainment Radio. And she is an expert sustainability correspondent. I love that title. We haven't said that one yet with your... she's got the longest bio. Longer than a UCI professor, I have to say. but at any rate, what we're having fun talking about right now is the Trash on Your Back Challenge. And the Trash on Your Back Challenge is something that actually anybody can do, right? And so Diana's hoping to find some KUCI students that might be interested in taking on this challenge and then sharing it with your schoolmates here on campus. And so there's a way to find out more about the Trash on Your Back Challenge, right? You have a website?
We do. We do. You can sign up. It's just trashonyourback.com.
Trashonyourback.com. Okay, so to go back to some of the great stories, that this is kind of the you know, the ice bucket challenge of our new year, maybe. We'll see. We had much fun with the ice bucket challenge. But the Trash on Your Back would be really fun to see, you know, what somebody like Bill Gates carries around with him or what he disposes of.
You know what? You're absolutely right. In trash, what we're realizing is we get laughing so hard about some of the stuff that we're, you know, one guy would say, oh my gosh, I'm not ordering anything. We realize that, well, I'm going to let the cat out of the bag on a few things. Mail.
Did you have a burger today?
I did not.
Okay.
I did not.
I didn't have to call you out on the burger.
I wanted to, but I didn't have a burger. No. But we realized that U.S. mail.
Oh,
I know, the flyers, that's usually the number one biggest impact, you know, or our Starbucks cups, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, that would be my biggest offense is I have a total of, is it 6 cup holders in my car? And I have to say they're usually all full, you know, by the end of the week, and some of them with old cups too. So, like I said, I conduct my own trash in the car experiment every week. But what are some of the other ones?
Well, I'll share a really funny one. And my dear friend, Matt Bogosian of USEPA, this was the first year out, and it was the second day of the call that we have each day during the Trash on Your Back 5-Day Challenge. It starts on Earth Day every year for the week. And this past year, everybody came back and said, can we do this more often? Can you come and do this in businesses? Can you come and do this in schools? I said, sure, let's do it. And just so we can all learn together. So Matt, on day two, actually, it was day one, I'm sorry. He gets on the phone with all of us, and it's a cast of characters. You know, there's just 16 of us. And he says, Di, I've got a rookie move of the year. I go, what's that? He said, well, right after we got done playing, you know, he's a musician as well as working for EPA. He said, right as soon as we got done playing, he said, my wife and I looked at each other, and the band was exhausted. We went back to the house, and she said, oh, let's just get Thai food. He said, okay. So they're all sitting around waiting for the Thai food to get there, and he looks out the window, and he goes, oh, no. Oh, no. You see the Thai food delivery person walking up to the door with this giant bag with a box inside of a box inside of a box inside of a box. He had to carry that for the entire week. He's also a Georgetown professor. And the students were cracking up. But he ended up looking a bit like Santa Claus.
Because he had so much. So, okay, so you said no plastic when you carry around your trash on your back. What did you carry yours in?
Well, here's what happened. Year one, I was like, okay, how are we going to do this so we're not using plastic? And how can we look through something and see what's in there, right? So I called up an organization called BioBags. And I said, hey, you guys, can we have some of your bags to use for trash on your back? And they're like, what the heck are you talking about? Well, there's actually bags out there that are 100% compostable, right?
Okay.
So they sent me a whole pile of them, and I gave them out to everybody. And we used those the first year and the second year.
Now, did they compost before the end of the week? Did they start biodegrading?
That's such a good question. We made it through the week, I have to say.
But just barely?
Oh, yeah. You get pretty creative when you have to put stuff in your you know, carry your stuff with you all week. It's like camping, you know, you pack in and pack out.
Right.
But that being said, when it comes to compostables. There's some tricks of the trade that you can come up with, you know, like using sealed containers to put your compostables in if you really have to. But you learn these
things. So they don't melt through the bag. Yes. Right.
Yes.
I don't want to digress too much yet, but the whole camping thing. Wow. You know, the more camping we do as a society, I think the more we are aware of the issues you and I have just discussed, how valuable water resources are, how valuable, you know, the trash is. It makes me think that we should, you know, add this to a national go camping campaign to build awareness and to take kids camping so that they can see really, because I think about how much camping I did as a kid and honestly how little camping I've been able to take my own children on. I can say that I was really happy to go camping in a nice motorhome, and that's not camping, folks. It is not camping. It doesn't count. Because really, true camping is addressing all these issues that we're talking about here. It's using the land to live off of and addressing all those issues like, you know, fire and water and food. And then, like you said, not leaving any trash behind. You can't burn the plastic in the fire, so you don't usually take a lot of plastic. But plastic is such a big part of our lives.
It is. And that is an amazing idea you just came up with. This is what happens on the show. We have these conversations, right? Just like on your show today. I can't thank you enough for including me in part of it. Thank you so much.
Oh, I'm happy you're here.
But for you to come up with a concept like that, it's so relatable.
Yeah.
And we get it when we camp. That's just the rule.
Right.
Imagine if that was just the rule every day in our lives.
Right. And, you know, circling back to the whole original intent behind the interview today of the New Year's resolutions, stop and think about how quickly we fall off of our New Year's resolutions in week 2, 3, or by February. The same thing happens when you try to adopt a new habit. If you really aren't, you know, dogged and determined, those new habits fall by the wayside too. It's no different. So you go off to camp, you have this great experience, you're going to make a life-changing thing, and then slowly but surely, you know, 2 weeks at home from that trip, you know, you're driving through McDonald's, you're grabbing a burger, you're getting a cup. Like, I just want to know, what's that 1, 2 things that I can change, I can really stick to for the long haul? That's the toughest part.
Well, I think the easiest thing, and we're starting to see a lot of new products that are designed for, you know, reusable water bottles, for example. Or
yes, but I now own 30 of those, and I didn't need 30 of those.
Exactly.
So, you know, it's almost like it creates another problem, the new products. I mean, new to my life are all those, you know, shopping bags. I live in an area where you guys, this is just now going to happen to you, but where I live, it's been going on for 2 years where you couldn't get shopping bags at your grocery store anymore. And they thought, what a great idea. Well, you know what they did? They just made thicker plastic bags. So that, you know, now I have 100 of those.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, when you get at the plastic bag issue, again, it's the, you know, I think about oceans and how quickly a lot of our plastic bags end up in the oceans. And if we are reusing these bags, you know, these new bags that have come out, in a perfect world, it would be used recycled materials to build these bags so that they're a closed loop system, and then just feed them back in and rebuild these bags again, so that we're reusing constantly and we're not throwing away.
Or making them with the types of plastics that are recyclable. And that, for the longest time, was a problem, wasn't it?
It was. I think it really gets back to your point earlier about our resolutions, our New Year's resolutions, or our resolutions for life. You know, habitually, you know, from a habit standpoint, what do we want to do here?
Well, what's the main thing that you and some of your constituents changed from the Trash on the Back Challenge? Like, give me like 3 things that really impacted you and what you do differently now.
Well, you know what? I started composting.
Oh, I love that one.
I started composting. And it was really, in the beginning, I was kind of like, But then when I can take that compost and put it on my vegetables, you know, for soil, and then you grow tomatoes and you get these beautiful tomatoes, it makes a huge difference. The other thing that I really kind of get excited about, and it's kind of a weird thing, but I started using, have you ever seen those glass ball containers that look like, we used to use them for canning years and years ago.
Oh, ball jars, you mean?
Ball jars, thank you. I'm using those all the time. I think they're just cool looking. I'll drink water out of them. I'll take them with me to, you know, the the farmer's market or whatever, and I'll just say, yeah, I want some almonds. They'll put them right in there for me or whatever, and just zip up the top. And
oh, rather than getting a new plastic bag from it.
Yeah, yeah. So we're starting to see a lot of people out there bringing their own, not just their bags for shopping, but, you know, their recyclable containers. Drew Jones, the gentleman that came up with Trash on Your Back, you know, the concept of it, he came back to me and said, oh, yeah, Di, he goes, I take my reusable containers with me, even when I go to get Chinese food or something. I said, they must want to kill you. He said, they do, but they do it.
Yeah. You know, I had an interesting thing happen to me the other day. I do a lot of gardening, and they give you those plants in the little plastic containers, and I save them all. Mm-hmm. And I have a guy I take them back to, and I said, you know, just replant in these. And I had another supplier say to me, oh, I can't even take those back from you. And I go, why? He goes, I'd have to wash them and bleach them before. And I was so devastated by that. I said, well, what if I, you know, told you with, you know, the purest of hearts that I didn't do anything to these except dump the soil out and reuse the soil? He said, I still couldn't risk it. He goes, my whole business. And isn't that a shame? Because there's going to come times where, you know, you can't trust. You know, just
Kimberly, you are hitting on the number one issue that we as consumers have a choice around. And this is where I get really excited. I'm going to have to calm myself down a little bit.
Oh, don't.
I will. I, you know, imagine
this
a world.
This is underground radio. We could be a little nutty here.
Imagine a world where we said, okay, sorry, I can't come back to you anymore and buy my seedlings because you won't recycle.
So my obligation in that moment is as a consumer, I could say, well, then I can't be your customer.
Exactly.
But I want to be its customer.
I know. So go back and say, you know what? I love being your customer. We need to change this. I'll help you change it. Let's figure it out. And do you also know that that is an incredible marketing opportunity for your nursery?
Right, right.
See the shift? That's what I'm talking about. Like one example, which is so cool to me, and I'm going to take us away a little bit from gardening, but everybody's familiar with NASCAR, right?
Right.
Okay. Everybody's familiar with the Formula One, right?
Right.
Okay. So recently I've learned it was launched in September in Beijing. They launched the Formula E. The Formula E is an electric car that goes 0 to 140 miles an hour on electricity.
Oh, okay. Wow. Okay.
And I said to him, wow, you know, that sounds very competitive to the fossil fuel cars, you know, the Formula Ones. And they said, we're not there to do that. I said, what do you mean? They said, we're there to race, have fun, make it sexy, but also introduce the possibility of expanding the electric car that makes it cool.
Right.
Right? So when you talk about going back and, you know, we're talking about consumerism. Yeah, you can go back to your nursery and say, you know, I need you guys to do this so that I'll continue to buy from you, or I'll help you do it. And then, you know, here you are as a radio host with all these listeners. You can say, hey, these guys shifted. They did this. Go buy from them. Same thing as the Formula E.
Right, right. Okay, all right. Well, so these kinds of things are happening. And so we're drawing down on our time. We have about 3 minutes left. What are some of the most important things that you do differently now as an individual? Just one person making a change.
Well, I'll tell you, many of my friends tease me, but I'm constantly using the recycled bags. I'm really looking closely at my showers and my water use. I'm one of those ones that will shut off the shower in between.
I do too. And it just breaks my heart that people don't recognize how serious the water issue is here in California. Oh man, just drives me crazy.
The interesting part about that is we average 15 gallons of water a day. We can knock that down to 5 if we really want to. Yeah, and we'll be saving money while doing it. So I think just to nail it, if we just think about what we do, and sort of, if you want to take a trash diet, join us for Trash on Your Back. If you want to learn more about water, you know, talk to Dr. Bill Cooper. He can teach you here right at the school. There's things we can do about, you know, get innovative. Think about how you want to design products out there, students especially. And because the big Fortune 500 companies are going to track you down if you figure it out.
Right, right. In other words, they'll modify their behavior to accommodate us if that's what we want.
Yeah. And buy more sustainably.
Okay, so trash on your back. What are some of the funniest things people carried? And then by day two, were not doing any more because they didn't want to be called out by their friends.
I think the number one, you know, probably paper towels, beer bottles, things that were heavy.
That, of course, heavy.
There's an incentive there, you see.
A very selfish one. How many pounds did some of the people end up carrying? You know, you said there was a rookie move for a lot of people.
I think the heavyweight titleist was 20 pounds.
Oh, that doesn't seem like very much, actually. I think I would have, I'd worry that with, you know, kids and all that other stuff, I guess it's really a personal challenge, not your whole family. So I think I'd get saddled with my whole family's trash if I did it for a week.
All right. I will challenge you. I will do it alongside with you.
Please,
I will come into the studio every day and we can get a little group to do it. And it's absolutely so much fun too.
It sure sounds like it is. So so back again to if you're just tuning in, you're a little late. If you're just tuning in, this is Kimberly Martin with Real People OC, and I host this show each and every week, and I try to feature an interesting individual in Orange County that is making a really meaningful contribution to their community. And Diana Dam, you certainly are one of those people. And so Diana hosts Sustainability News and Entertainment Radio, and she is an expert sustainability correspondent. Do you want to take like 30 seconds to tell us about ourday.net? Because that's another thing that you can find out about going to your website, which is snetoday.com. And you have about 30 seconds to tell us about Our Day and to find out more about what you're doing.
Absolutely. Our Day is an amazing organization. ARE is American Renewable Energy Day. And there are people on that board focusing in on how do we make the great transition from fossil fuels to renewable energy. Everybody from Jimmy Carter to T. Boone Pickens to Ted Turner to Laura Seidel Turner to one of my favorites, Dr. Sylvia Earle. They're all coming together to really crack the code and create the roadmap for getting off of our reliance on fossil fuels and taking us right to renewable energy.
Fascinating discussion. Well, I had such a wonderful time with you today, Diana. Maybe we'll be hearing more from you in the future here at KUCI. Up next is Counterspin Radio. And then after that, we have Matt Kaplan in the studio bringing to you Planetary Radio. So, Diana, thank you for being here. And we'll be tuned into us next week, Thursdays from 4 to 5. Where we'll bring you another interesting individual from Orange County. So have a great day.